Yakir, we need you because you're our Ramosha expert. I think that was a yes. So let me just briefly tell you how I understand this Ramosha. And then, Yakir, feel free to jump in afterwards and clarify further, or feel free to disagree. So again, we're coming off our discussion about employment relationship and what kind of a kinyan does the Balabayas have in his Poalim. Right? And what, reciprocally, what kind of claim does the Poal have against the Balabayas? Now, Ramosha's analysis is very helpful for us, because Ramosha was asked the question, what happens when you have an employer, in his case somebody owned a factory, he employed worker A, then the, I guess, business went up and he needed more workers, he hired employee B, then business went down and the employer did not have sufficient work to provide for both of them. And so the question he asked Ramosha is whether he has an equal duty to both, meaning he should cut both of their employment in half and split whatever work is available between the two of them. Or does he have a prior obligation to worker A such that worker B should be cut off, he should be trimmed in total, and whatever work is available should be given to worker A? That's the question that Ramosha was asked. Now, I think Yakir is right that A, this is talking about within the duration of the employment agreement. It's the only way to make sense of it. Right? So the Baal Bayis has duties to both of them, just under the agreement that they're still employed. They're within the terms of their, within the duration of their contract. And then secondly, that the inability to provide work after the business went south constitutes a legitimate form of anus. Right, such that the Balabayas doesn't have to pay the Poalim for not being able to provide them with work. Right, so there's no liability from the Balabayas' side in his hefsid and not being able to supply sufficient work. The question is, on the assumption that he has no liability, how should he divide what's left? How should he allocate that between the two workers? Should he give it fully to worker A and cut worker B, or should he give them each half wages and half the work that's available? Does that sound right, Yakir?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, Yoni, does that sound right to you?
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Yakir?
Yep. Sounds good. Okay, who else is on the line? Cole, does that sound right to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree with you.
Okay, so now Ramosha says, well, in order to answer this question, I think the question makes a lot of sense, right? You're an employer and you want to know what the appropriate thing to do is according to halacha. So Moshe says, well, now it depends on the nature of the employment relationship, basically what we've been studying until now. And I'm gonna really just fast forward ahead just to the end, and we can come back to the beginning if it becomes important. If you look here, so Moshe goes through this really long-winded analysis of Sefiras Poalim, and he gets into the nitty-gritty weeds of the Sigya. And he just summarizes here. I'm on page 18 in my Marmakom sheet that I just emailed out. Hello, Ben. Welcome. You didn't see Leib. Did you see Leib anywhere?
No.
Okay. And Ramosha here says, look, there are three shitos about the nature of Sechiras Poalim. And you can see I inserted these numbers here into our source sheet. So the first option is the Marami Rutenberg Mordechai approach, that there's the employer has a kinyan haguf in the poel, kimo evad ivri. And that's theory number one. Right? So the Balabayas has some ownership right over the person who's the worker. Now Moshe says, according to that view, according to theory number one, the kinyan haguf theory, it's clear that lo shayach kinyan zeh lepoel bebalabayas. There's no reciprocal kinyan going from the poel back to the Balabayas. It's like ownership is one direction. You own your chattel doesn't own you. So the Balabayas owns the worker. The worker has no correlative claim right against the Balabayas. I think that's the crucial claim of theory number one for Ramosha. Then Ramosha says, well, there's theory number two.
Even though when he quotes it originally, he does reference the Kesef Mishnah, who mentioned Mishubadim Gufim Zelosah.
That there is a reciprocal. So how does that get jettisoned?
I mean,
at
he doesn't
the
really,
end?
The
It's a different case. It's not the case of a Poe of Olivias. It's we saw, I think, describe it in.
Yeah, Schutzfin.
Yeah, so like when he first developed this, like that model, he
was willing to acknowledge that there's some.
He quotes that like as part of his. Yeah.
So then the question is, how does that get dropped?
Yeah, and he doesn't really deal with like the reciprocality. He kind of like drops that to the
right. Like you might
the
think
summary is like all of a sudden where he talks about starts talking about the reciprocal
right
nature of it.
Right, like you might think my ownership over stuff does come with correlative like obligations and you know protect them or something. And
I don't think he's making an inherent claim. Though. I don't think he's saying that a kingdom
can
never
be in this case
or always is correlative. It's just in this case it happens not to be.
Okay. This is fair. We'll get into the deeper analysis of the specific claims that he makes, and I think a lot of it's mysterious to me, like why Moshe associates one thing with one view, but let's just get his theory out there, and then we could proceed to subject it to greater scrutiny. So again, so Moshe's on theory one, there's a kinyan beguf ha-poel, so he says, lo shayich kinyan ze le-poel be-bal ha-bayis. So there's not going to be a reciprocal claim right that the bal ha-bayis, that the poel has against the bal ha-bayis. Okay? So it sounds like he's thinking that the kinyan view is one-directional. Then, theory number two, he says, comes out of Tosfos and Kiddushin Yud Zayin, that there's no kinyan beguf, okay? So there's no ownership over the poel's person. You see where I am in there, Moshe?
Yeah.
Ella kinyan lehischaivus. Okay, so Moshe doesn't really flesh out what that kinyan lehischaivus is. Cole, maybe just mute your computer because we hear you typing. Or we hear somebody typing. So
there
just.
You go.
We hear somebody typing.
Not typing.
Oh. Maybe Akir, maybe just mute your computer.
All right.
So the second theory is that there's no kinyan beguf, all there is a kinyan hischaivus. Okay. Now, what is a kinyan hischaivus? Not so clear. Moshe doesn't tell us what these terms mean. But Moshe says it's possible on theory number two that the kinyan hischaivus is reciprocal. So the Bal HaBayis has a claim right, to use Hofeld's term, against the Poel, that the Poel do work for him. As Ramosha says, Shabal HaBayis ishlos chus chia v'tviya al ha-Poelim sheyasu melachto shehisnu. Bal HaBayis has a claim right against the Poelim that they do work. Just one second. V'ha-Poelim yeshlehem chus chia v'tviya al Bal HaBayis sheyitin ha-melacha shehisnu. And the workers have a correlative claim right against the Bal HaBayis that they'd be provided with work. So on theory number two, Ramosha thinks that there is this kind of correlativity, and this correlativity of claim rights. Now, on theory number three, and then I'll get to you, Cole, that's the theory of the Yushalmi, that there and the Nesivus' view within the Yushalmi, that there's no kinyan whatsoever. And all you have, he says, is a chiv be'alma sheyesh lekol echad al atzmo. Ramosha wants to say there's some sort of artificial duty, a self-imposed duty, that does not correlate to a claim right in the other party. So I create a duty in myself to do some work for Yoni, let's say. Yoni maybe creates a duty in himself to pay me for that work, but the duty does not correspond to a correlative claim right in the other party. Right? So you might think of this even as like independent shvuas. Right? So Yoni has a shvua.
No,
that,
I don't think that's what
Rav Moshe is saying. What? Well, he says, Chiyab alma sheyesh lekol al atzmo, sha'apol en mechuyav en mitzad atzmo en lasos ha-malacha sheyesnu, u'bal ha-bayis mechuyav mitzad atzmo. Yeah, Cole, you wanted to...
No. Well, I was going to say,
just speak loudly, Cole. Speak loudly so everyone could hear you.
Here, can you hear me now?
Yes, much better.
Yeah, Ramosha does say that one not communicated between a Kenyan Hivas and a Kenyan Goof would be the right to sell the labor to somebody else. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. But he also says...
Wait, hold off on these deeper analyses of Ramosha's position. Because first I just want to get out the view.
So I'm just trying to tease out what he means. I'm trying to figure out what the words mean, but I think what Ramosha says, can you roughly describe it by Alma Mitzad HaPoel Lato Samalach Shehisnu Mitzad HaBailim Litain Lo Amalach Shehisnu? I don't think you can infer from that, right? That's the same that's the same channel of analysis, right? What I just read.
I think so. I'll just read you the words that I read then. That the polim are mechuyavin mitzad atzman lasos hamalacha shehisnu, and balabayas mechuyav mitzad atzmo litein hamalacha shehisnu. There's no correlativity. There's no claim rights that each person has against the other.
No, I'm not. No, come on. Ramosha doesn't. Ramosha doesn't. I'm just saying.
Paul, you have to speak very loudly so everyone could hear you.
Ramosha didn't know. Okay, I was going to say, Ramosha didn't know Hofeld well enough. Ramosha thinks that there's correlativity. He didn't know Hofeld well enough to be able to like, you know, exclude the possibility of correlativity from the...
He explicitly does that, Cole.
Yeah, I think Yair's responding that, no, I think that's exactly how Ramosha is trying to differentiate the views, right? Theory number two has this kind of Hofeldian correlativity. And theory number three is just these independent obligations.
Yeah, he's explicit in his analysis of the Rishonim.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's theory two or theory three?
We're in theory three. Theory two is correlative. Theory.
Sorry. Okay.
Okay. Now, I think a good Hofeldian, I think... A good Hofeldian, I think, would say that it's not so coherent to have these duties that are not owed to the party who's entitled to have them perform. Like, what does it mean that it's a chiyuv mitzad atzmo that doesn't correlate to the other person's claim right? Right? It's incoherent from Hofeld's perspective. What's that called? You just have to speak loudly and clearly.
I said, to whom does he attribute the third view?
He says it's the Yushalmi, according to Rav, right? Ein Yisrael konim zemize. And he thinks it's also implicit in the Nesivus' analysis of it. Okay?
Now I see that.
Yeah, so we have three views in Ramosha, right? So theory number one is that there's a kind of ownership that the Baal Bayis has of the Poel. That means the Poel has no correlative claim against the Baal Bayis. Theory number two says that there is this correlativity of claims. There's a kinyan le'eschaivus. Each person has this kind of claim right against the other. And then there's theory number three that there are just these artificial obligations that are not correlative and don't correspond to a claim right in the other party. Now, how does this tie into his analysis? Ramosha says the following. Now, it's helpful here to think of Ramosha as just trying to answer the question posed to him, right? He just wants to know, is the nature of the employment relationship such that an employer has equal responsibilities to employee A, who was hired at T1, and employee 2, who was hired at T2? Or does the employer have greater responsibilities, prior obligations, to employee 1, who was hired at T1? That's just what Ramosha is trying to answer here. And then Ramosha brings his analysis to bear on that question, and he says, well, on theories 1 and 3, that both hold, there's no correlative claim right that the Poel has against the Baal HaBayis. Okay? Then the Baal HaBayis has equal obligations to both Poelim. I think that's the crucial move that Ramosha makes. Right? If neither Poel has any special claim, well, if neither has any claim right against the Baal HaBayis, then neither is going to have a special claim or a prior claim or a better claim against the Baal HaBayis, right? That's the nature of theory 1 and 3 is that they conclude that there's no claims that the Poel can level against the Baal HaBayis. And so, if the Baal HaBayis now has to... if he has to triage, he has to trim employment, then he has to trim their hours equally. Right? Or the right thing to do is for him to limit both of their employment and divide whatever work there is evenly between the two of them. Does anybody see that? I think that's a most substantive move.
I don't really get it.
Well,
I don't really understand it.
One second. Well, but I think that's what he's doing. Okay. However, if it's theory number two, that there is a correlativity of claims, or that the Poel's the Balabais's duty to, the Balabais's duty to provide work correlates to a duty, a claim right in the Poel to be against the Balabais to be provided with work. Then Ramosha says that we, and this is a further chiddush here, that the way to conceive of that duty is, it's as if the Baal HaBayis, when he hired worker A, is transferring to him the claim right to whatever work is available. And you could think of this almost as a gift. At time T1, the Baal HaBayis transfers the entitlement to whatever labor is available to employee one. Then, when he goes ahead and he hires employee two, given that he already gave all this stuff away to employee one, he could only give away what's left. Baal HaBayis can't give over what's no longer his. And because he transferred the first stuff to employee one, by the nature of the relationship, the Baal HaBayis can only be giving away the leftovers to employee two. So Ramosha says, So Ramosha says, on theory number two, when the factory's productive powers are diminished because there's less demand or whatever, and you have to lower the wages you're going to pay the workers, you don't have enough work to go around, so then the proper thing to do is to trim worker number two and give all the labor to worker number one, because worker number one already has that prior claim, a kind of over an ownership or an entitlement to the first dib at whatever labor is available. Does everybody see that? That's Ramosha's crucial argument. And so he says this question is going to break down along these three shittos. Yes, Cole.
I think that second the last theory that there's this kind of quantum of labor that's acquired by the worker, it works very well with the view that we discussed earlier that what the worker is paid for is units of labor performed. In other words, it's not that there's a task and it's the completion of the task that everybody's compensated for, then the question would kind of be up in the air. But if what the worker is paid for is, you know, the whatever, the infinitesimal unit, they can be like quantified that way, so he backs out in a day, he gets paid for that much, that works well with the second theory of promotion.
Yes, I agree to that. I think that's true. And I think that it's very interesting that Ramosha thinks of the labor in terms of so on theory number two, the way to conceive of the employment agreement, does everybody see this is an anaf hay, right at the beginning. You guys see anaf hay? Is that where you are, Yoni?
Yeah.
Right? So you see Ramosha says, now I'm gonna answer the question, and he says the im nema is right at the top of, you know. The im nema shehu. And this is theory number two. Kinyan hischaiva sheyesh le'echad al chaveiro, right? The correlativity view. Sheyesh le'fizeh le'poel kinyan al Baal HaBayis.
Where does this kinyan word come from?
What?
Where does this come from?
So he called it kinyan hischaivas. That's how Moshe consistently refers to theory number two. There's the kinyan aguf and then the kinyan hischaivas. Again, I think Ramosha is not precise here with his language. It's confusing. Why is kinyan hischaivas? Which is it? But there are two Kenyan views, one Kenyan Aguf, one Kenyan Eschaivas, and then there's the non-Kenyan view, which is theory number three. But Ramosha characterized that as, it's a Kenyan al Baal HaBayis, sheyitain lo ha'avoda, then lo nischaiv kla la hasheni. In a case where there's limited work, only sufficient work for employee one, there's no obligation at all to number two. Kimo b'chefetz hanikna le'echad, she'i efshar shuv l'haknoso la'acher. Look at that crucial phrase. Moshe says, it's just like once you give something already away to person A, you can no longer gift it to person B. It's no longer yours. And Moshe is saying a double chiddush. He's saying when it comes to Schiras Poelim on theory two, A, we view it, as Cole was saying, as a transfer of work. Right? We view it in terms of this work is now, you're entitled to it. And B, that it's not just a kind of a... That's right. That's right. It's like think of like the avoda as just this tangible good this tangible material good almost that now belongs to the Poel. And that's number two, which is that it's fully transferred. Right? Not just that there's like a kind of a duty to give it to worker number one. Or Moshe says, "Kimo bechevet hanikna le'echad she'iefshar shiv lahaknoso la'acher." It's out of your control. You can no longer transfer it to person number two. Now, I'm not sure if that EFSHAR part is crucial for his understanding of the labor agreement, or he's just using that as the analogy to motivate the intuition that, look, once something is owed to A, it can't also be owed to B. Okay?
I think this would also lead to the conclusion, if this view is correct, that the Baal Bayit wants to be chozer and just pay him, the worker would have right to say, no, I want to perform the work.
Because that's what he's entitled to.
Right, it's
his or something, right?
Yeah.
Maybe the worker has no recourse, like maybe it's like stealing an object. But I guess Veheshev is like Zeylash or Gazal, you have to return the object first. As you're saying on this view, it's the transfer of entitlement. The labor belongs to the Poel, and so the Poel has a claim to that, right, prior to a claim for compensation. I think that may be correct. Good. So that, I think that's Ramosha's analysis. And then, you know, Ramosha just comes down saying that he thinks theories one and three have greater evidence in halacha, and those are the ones that have clear support in certain Mishonim. He's not so sure about theory number two. And so he just says, oh, yeah, I think it's obvious that employee one has no prior claim to the work over employee two because theory two just doesn't have a clear enough basis in halacha to justify that. That's my reading of this tshuva of Ramosha. And I think it's very interesting the way he develops these three views. I don't think they're fully clear to my mind exactly how the concepts of kinyan, hischaivus, correlativity, the non-correlativity relationship, how coherent those are. But at least this is the best sense that I've made so far in the Ramosha. Yakir, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate.
So you're in agreement with the analysis. What do you think of his? What do you have any thoughts on his categories on the non-correlativity view? Yakir?
What kinds of thoughts? I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe this might just be because I don't completely understand Hofel very well. But I'm not sure it's exactly correct to characterize difference here as Hofeldian relativity but not Hofeldian relativity because there are two different. I mean, there's sort of two distinct duties going on. One relating to providing the work and one relating to doing the work.
Right. And they're on different parties, right? Right.
It's not a question, let's say on view two, that there is this correlativity. It's not like a Hofeldian correlativity of one side as a duty and the other side as a claim, right? It sounds like there are two duties going in either direction.
No, so the way I understood theory number two is that the correlativity is whether everybody agrees. The way I understand that is that you could think on theory number two that the Poel has, well, the Baal HaBayis has a duty to provide labor to the Poel. The question is whether that duty translates into a correlative claim right that the Poel has against the Baal HaBayis to sue or demand that labor. That's how I understood the correlativity. Whereas theory number three thinks that yes, the Baal HaBayis is obligated himself to provide labor to the worker, but it doesn't bottom out in a claim right that the worker can then enforce against the Baal HaBayis. That's how I. So the correlative.
I wouldn't even use the word enforce because the Moshe is explicit.
Not even that he could assert.
Right, Moses is clearly not valid that
correct.
We enforce personal obligations. Like
correct,
that.
Right. It's not about enforcement. I agree. It's about just whether he has a claim.
Yeah.
Right. So that's how I understood the correlativity issue.
Why can't the promise, so to speak, that duty that the employer has with regard to himself, Why can't that, you can also, why can't you make the same claim that that duty extends to priority for employee number one? He has a greater duty than employee one, than employee two.
Because Ramosh is thinking, I think, that in order for the correlative claim right to exist, you have got to have given something to the POEL. Right, so Yoni's saying, I think very nicely, that, well, you know, if I obligate myself to person A and then later to person B, there's some priority of my duty to person A than there is to my obligation to person B, right?
Right. And you could easily make that claim.
Right. But Ramosha is not thinking that. He's thinking in order for the claim right to come about, it has to be that he's got something in his pocket already that's his that he could level against me, which is like literally... He, in theory number two, he acquired the malacha, and so that's what he has over person one. Right? So that's what he has over person two. Person two can't get malacha that's already belonging to person A. I think it is a little fuzzy why Ramosha thinks that's the right way to look at it, but that's my reconstruction of his view.
I think at the end of the day, that ends up being the primary driving force that differentiates.
Go ahead, Yakir. Yeah, louder.
Sorry. I think in the end of the day, it comes out that the primary difference between these views is in what is the object what is the object of the kinyan? Like, what is the Dabar HaNikna?
Well, I think on theory number three, there is no Dabar HaNikna.
Right, exactly. The question is it the Paul himself? Is it the labor, or is it nothing?
That's right. I think that's exactly right. On theory number one, the Dabar HaNikna is the Paul himself, right?
No, but he struggles with that. I don't think he thinks the labor itself is the thing. That's why he has like all this like.
Yeah, in the beginning, he has a variation.
Well, like everything throughout, he has like all these like harichos about like what exactly. Is it Kenya starting?
That mean?
What are you Kone? Is it Sudar? Is it the Atchalas Malacha? It can't be the Atchalas Malacha because this and this and this and this. And he's like struggling with like where.
Yeah, what exactly it is.
Yeah,
right.
But I'm saying, I don't think.
Ayin Shema, we discussed, you know, two chaburas ago about Le Maisiyada.
Yeah, but I don't think he thinks that the Atchalas Malacha or the Malacha itself can be Kone. I think that's what he's like. Pushing back against the whole.
But I think definitely looking at his summary at the end here, and I think Akir's right that look at the first theory number one is that Marami Rutenberg's strong Kenyan in the Poel himself view,
right.
And so the Dabar HaNikna is the Poel, whether it's the Maisa Yada, Begufo, however you want to parse that out. Theory number two is it's a transfer of goods, the goods being the work. And Ramosha speaks of it in strong Kenyan terms. Right, the goods are transferred. We'll see. I'm going to send around an article that I want us all to read on contract theory. That some people think of contracts in this way: when you contract something, you're transferring like the goods of the agreement, like the entitlement to the labor, like just like a sale. I think Ramosh is very close to that theory here. And so, once you transfer it to person A, you just don't own it anymore. To transfer it to person B. That's a very strong view of contracts.
Come on.
Yeah, and then theory number three thinks that there's no Kenyan, and that's why there are no reciprocal correlative duties. I think you could have had a weaker view and said that there's no Kenyan and still have correlative duties, because not every duty is a Kenyan, right? Duties are just obligations to perform certain things that could be owed to another party that have correlative claim rights. I'm confused about Ramosha's conceptual framework and the structure that he's using, but I think Yakir is right that look. That this is the cleanest way of thinking about it. Theories one and two have a Kenyan. They disagree about what the Kenyan's in. Theory number three has no Kenyan. Yakir, do you want to make a point before we get to Cole?
No, go ahead.
Okay, Yashkaf, Yakir. Yakir, I thought your WhatsApp text during the break were very helpful in clarifying Ramosha's view, especially the thing about clearly we're within the duration of the employment agreement, and also I think the ones thing is very important. Right, Ramosha's clear that there's no liability here because... the inability to provide work is justified by the Ptur Anus, which we'll cover actually later in the year. Cole, the floor is yours.
I was just going to add, maybe for another time, so the second view
view, fine. The third view, fine. The second view, you might think, gets you involved in, like, a weird Indovakin,
yes. Problem. Interesting point.
Maybe.
That's a really interesting point.
So, I don't think it does on the basis of the Rambam's reading of the Gemara in Bava Basra, but this is really a shot sugya that I don't feel qualified. Like, clear, like you said either to me privately or earlier in the year that it could be that the Kinyan only takes effect once the work begins. You might also say that could be true. My current reading is that that just means there's no contract without some kind of consideration, like concrete consideration. Like there's no like mutual promising, and this is the problem with the third view, that mutual promising is, although not if you don't say it's a Kinyan, which is, you know, which might be a, you know, a reductio or an enachanami, depending on your point of view, that in the halakha, a Kinyan requires some kind of exchange
I think that reads too much of secular law's consideration into halacha's conception of kinyanim, personally. But we could talk more about that, and we will actually when we get into this question of aschalas malacha as a kinyan. But I think Cole's actually raising a really interesting point, guys. On what do you all think of Cole's point on theory two, that the way to conceive of this kind of employment contract is as a transfer of the labor. Why doesn't that run afoul of Devar Shel Bal Yolam? Right? Does labor have to be present right now? Or is the idea that as long as he starts some of the labor, that's enough Baba Olam to be machna the rest of the labor? Ben, you have thoughts on this?
Can I just ask something quickly?
It's never stopped you in the past, so go ahead.
Yeah, right. So there is some. I just want to say there is some ambiguity about whether in Kinyan Alva Shalom Ala Olam refers to the kind of Maisa Kinyan that you require, or to the like thing ultimately that you're transferring.
Right.
You might think that the basic Kinyan is a Kinyan Sudar. So a Kinyan Sudar could be on any number of things.
Right.
A Kinyan Sudar is the thing your father, you know, loves to, you know, say about the, which is like a good, very brilliant Kiddush about the Gemara in.
It's a Kinyan on the Gemara's Das.
Also in Kiddushin. Right. Yeah. But there's a chet to being transferred, like the Hanah that you the Kodesh. Is, you know, want the machnet to get a certain amount of honey. Like, that's a. So it could be that Olam just has to do with that, and it doesn't have to do with the.
But that'll be an easy way. That'll be a clean way of solving this question.
Right.
Right.
Presumably they did a, you know, a Kenyan.
That's right. You'll say you're right. There's something special. But I think you're right, and we'll have to revisit this as we get deeper into this question. If we go in for the Ramosha view, I'll send you this article by Peter Benson also. Peter Benson, he's a lawyer, he's a law professor and a philosopher at University of Toronto. He has like this kind of view of contracts, that it really is the transfer of entitlements. Here it's like the transfer of the labor. When we get into that question more deeply, this, and try to figure out in better, more precisely what this second theory of Moshe is, then I want us to litigate that question, Cole. Okay?
Okay.
And I think some of the points of the Ramosha, especially the earlier parts of the tshuva, I want to go back into once we get into these theories, especially theory number two, and see what support he could mobilize for it. Okay? Okay, but for our interest right now, I wanted to get into this Ramosha just to show you that he thinks that he has three theories about the nature of Kenyan, and he thinks they bear directly on this question of how the Balabais should trim his employees when he has to triage. Okay. Let's move on now. So I'm now on page 20 in the source sheets. I want to address explicitly something that has been implicit in much of our discussion until this point. And that is just explicitly, what's the relationship between the Poel and the Eved in Halacha? So our analysis thus far, you know, we've seen shitas like the Marami Rutenberg, that a Poel is Gufo Kanoi in the same way that an Eved is Gufo Kanoi, right? And we exported a lot of dinim from Eved to Poel on those grounds. And on the face of it, that's problematic, right? It's like it's prima facie implausible that Eved and Poel are sufficiently similar kinds that we can just export dinim from a slave category or servitude to just any kind of employment agreement, right? That has to be justified. And so what I've been arguing throughout is that, well, maybe these are very similar kinds of relationships, and just there's the difference between them is a matter of degree, not a matter of kind, right? So I think that's implicit in the view of Gufo Kanoi, and that we should view the Poel as kind of being owned by the Balabais, and the Nafka Mina that come out of that view. Now, point out also, you know, it could be, you could also say things that our intuitions about slavery are much more severe. It's like colored by like a, you know, American, like the American question of slavery in the South and the Civil War. And so we think like slavery in these abhorrent terms. You know, you're thinking of like a master who's beating his slaves and raping his maidservants, things like that. Whereas like the halacha itself has like, you know, very strong protections for avadim, especially when it comes to an eved ivri. So you might say, well, if you have all these protections, then avdus doesn't look so much like avdus. You know, you have to feed your eved, you have to give your eved a similar pillow. Chazal say kol kone eved latzmo is kone rav latzmo. And so you might say, in that framework of law, it's conceivable that the intuitions that we normally have about slavery shouldn't apply to the Torah's category of the Eved Ivri, maybe even Eved Kanani, that gets transported to Poel. That's just one way to mitigate the...
Daniel Patrick Moynihan agrees.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing. In the Moynihan report that he wrote in 1964, he said that Atlantic slavery was like unique in the history of slavery because of how little the slave was protected by law.
Right.
But yeah, I think you're
on. Right. As you can say, whether if it's like a regulated institution, then there are ways of, you know, it not being morally problematic.
Yeah.
So that's one easy way to try to narrow the gap between the Eved and the Poel. I just want to draw our attention to the discussion in the Rishonim that some people clearly think that the main difference, conceptual distinction between an Eved and a Poel is simply one of time. How long is the employment agreement for? And just what makes somebody a slave is not the substantive content of the work that they're doing. It's not the degree to which they're subject to the caprice of their owner slash employer. It's just the duration of the employment term. That's the point I want to make right now, and that really narrows the gap between Eved and Poel, right? Just difference in amount of time. That's how the Torah distinguishes between these categories. So, in Devarim Perek Tesvav, which we have here on page 20, Torah says that when you send your Eved Ivri free, lo yikshe beinecha. Ben, why don't you read it for us? I've been talking too much. Oh, Yakir was going to talk more about their emotion. Yeah, good. So Torah says, don't be upset when you're sending away your Eved. Why? Because he worked for you for 6 years, which is Mishneh Schar Sachir. So what does Mishneh Schar Sachir mean? because he worked.
So he provided for you, like he created a profit for you.
So is that what the actual justification? What the point that the Torah is getting at here? It's not our concern right now. So, but I'm more interested in just the Torah saying because he worked for double. Wait, somebody showed in parses double the term of a sakhir. Right, so he works for 6 years, which is double that of a poel, sakhir. Right? The words themselves, not so good about ki mishnes char sakhir, can mean a few things. It can mean like he worked doubly as hard. Or,
right, that's what I was going to read.
Yeah. So some Rishonim say, and they conjoin this with the Pasuk in Yeshaya, Tes Zayin, Pasuk Yedalet, which we have here.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ben, continue doing your excellent job. Yeah, we don't care what's going to happen in 3 years, right? Just the fact is that the 3 year, what's going to happen in 3 years, that those 3 years is the term of Ben? Havasachir, right? So that sounds like the Torah is assuming that a poel works for 3 years. It seems to be explicit in Yeshaya, and it's also implicit, now you can read it back into Dvarim Tesvav, that the Eved who works for six is working double that of a poel.
Yeah, that's really interesting, specific reading of Yeshayahu that he's with. You know,
why? B'shalo shanim kishnei sakhir.
Why does it have to be definitional? Why is it? Yeah, 3 years is how long the sakhir perhaps would work. Unless you're trying to argue that that is the
right
for a sakhir.
I don't know. It sounds like it. No. Why else
would
it
say shnei sakhir?
What?
Why would that be a useful phrase if it's not
right
approximately accurate to how right a sakhir works?
Well, yeah.
It's like Ben, in 12 years, like you know, some contracts are for 12 years. You know, you'll be 30 something.
Oh, the other way, if you knew 3 years was the same something, then it would just be redundant,
though. I'm saying the words don't mean any. According to Rabbi Gemara's reading, the words mean something and they'd be redundant. According to your reading,
yeah, I was the first person to give me smicha in the Chabura. Yeah,
so.
I'm not going to know the recording.
Yeah, that's right. No, I'm not. It's, you know, I like. We're all colleagues here, actually. We are. It's true.
I'm not yet.
In what way are Shalosh Shanim Kishnei Sakhir, if not in that they define the term of Sakhir?
I mean, definitely Nishay asked the point. He's referencing it because they don't, like, it's like a way of proving how long it's going to be. That's going to be the context. Like he's trying to say, like, in 3 years' time, prove this is the exact, or this is the exact amount of time as a regular Sakhir.
Okay.
So the question here is, if you think that a poel borders on a kind of eved, where are you going to think? So, on the assumption that it's usher generally to sell yourself as an eved gratuitously, and here I supplied the Rambam to demonstrate that that's the case, do you also think that it's problematic for you to sell yourself as either a sakhir for 3 years or for something that's more than a schiros that's going to border on a kind of avdus? Okay, so if you look at the Rambam in Avadim Aleph Aleph, so Yoni, why don't you read the second half of the Rambam here in Aleph Aleph? You see it on the source sheet? Mocharatz Moketzad?
I'm on your source sheet, I don't see the Rambam.
It's right here.
Mocharatz Moketzad, Zed Yisra, She Hani Biyoter, Nana Lo Torah Shuk Limkor, Tatfon Shunemar, Ki Mocha Chicha Imach, Ki Mokar Lacha, ואין רשאי למכור את עצמו ולהצניע את דמיו או לקנות בהם סחורה או כלים או לינם לבעל חוב אלא אם כן צריך לאוכלן בלבד.
Right, so the Rambam starts off by saying the Torah gives you a liberty to sell yourself as an Eved, but only if you need the money, right? It's prohibited to sell yourself as an Eved just to make a profit, right? You can't sell yourself להצניע את דמיו, לקנות בהם סחורה או כלים, pay off a debt. It's got to be literally just for sustenance. Elim kein tzarich la'ochlam bilvad. That's the only time it's permissible to sell yourself as an eved. Go on.
Ve'in adam rashay limkor et atzmo ad she lo yishar lo klum v'afilu k'suk lo tishar lo achar kach limkor et atzmo.
Yeah, right. So it's only permissible in a case of last hope, right? You just have no assets left to sell off, so then Torah permits you to sell yourself. And this is consistent with what we've seen, avadai heim v'lo avadim l'avadim. The Torah doesn't want you to be an eved, and so it doesn't allow you to sell yourself as a slave unless these conditions obtain. So, good. Turn to the Ibn Ezra here on page 20. Yeah, it's all on your sheet. It's just I rearranged them a little bit. So if you look around,
yeah,
see,
yeah,
it's
most of them are in order. I think.
Okay, yeah, most of them are. So Ibn Ezra, in commenting on this pasuk on Mishnah Schar Sachir Avadcha, so he pipes in, Yair Bar Nibida for us, Lo Yikshe Beinecha.
Sure, Lo Yikshe Beinecha, Matzanu Katuv Shalosh Shanim Kinei Sachir.
So he points us to Yishaya Tezayin, right?
V'zo Raya, Ki Ein Roshut L'Adam She'Yaskir Asmo, Yoter Mishalosh Shanim.
Yeah. And he thinks there's also an Isser on the Socher also. Yeah. That's right. So it's like an Isser on the worker. Right? Ein Rishus La'adam. Remember, Ein Rishus is ambiguous. If it means you have a legal disability in the Hofeldian sense, right? You have no power. Like it's not effective. Or does it mean that it's impermissible? Right, so you have the power to, it's effective, but it's wrong. V'zu raya ki ein rishus la'adam she'yaskir atzmo yoser mishalosh shanim. Right, so it's wrong or whatever. It's you have a disability for selling yourself for more than 3 years. Okay, why would that be? Why would it be? So he's citing the fact that the Torah thinks that schiras is 3 years, right? And I think his diak is it's ad and not more. Right, permissible labor agreements are limited to three year terms. He doesn't tell us why, but he just infers it from the pasuk. Do you have a reason why or?
Like you have a
when you put it that way, no.
Well, that.
So but I'm kidding. Yes. Well, or what's the grounding for this, right? Why is it Ein Rasha? Just the Torah says 3 years, and why is he?
It's once and more than 3 years, it's too analogous to Abdus, and whatever it is that makes it wrong for you to sell yourself as an Abdus to someone else.
So Ibn Ezra doesn't say that, right? Yeah. He doesn't say that, so it's not good. But that's what other Rishonim seem to say, right?
It's like the same like strain of thought, like the point that we're obviously not to pro avadim, and that's like part of the pasuk, like Shevei Nacha, like you have to give them a gift, you have to all these things. So like Kav HaChomer, like. A sucker who didn't really need to sell himself, like, can't sell himself for so long. It's like an extension of the same, like, principle.
Yeah. Right, I mean, Torah is just against all,
forced labor force.
Yeah, or all, any time someone is, like, sacrificing their autonomy to be working for somebody else.
Yeah,
right?
This is all kind of, it's just odd, because sucker is just a normal form of work.
Right.
So
it's not Avdus.
But it's not. Like, it seems like the Rambam's issue with Avdus is that it's almost like this, you know, like, don't become reliant on it as an easy way out of your problems.
Did you say that? That it's an easy way out, or it's just that
Or like, maybe that's why only if you're in extreme poverty, you can't just use it to get rid of a debt or this. Meaning, it seems
right.
Like there would be.
It's more chamor.
People would use it as a way to like, oh, I have a debt, I'm just going to be an ebed and then absolve the debt as opposed to actually paying it off. But theoretically, how would you pay it off? Well, the only way to pay off would be to become a sahir.
Right.
So why would
it? It's not so, clearly it's not as extreme as the prohibition on avadim is what you're pointing out.
Yeah.
Okay, but you see the Ibn Ezra's frowning on it.
I'm being on that right, but it just seems strange.
Seems strange
like,
to you.
Like what's wrong with being stuck here for 4 or 5 years?
Right. Good. So let's
you mean
see.
You're not self-employed.
Why are you not self-employed? Is it being stuck here? How's that not being self-employed?
Because you're
someone else is paying for you. You're not, you know, working the land or generating your own marketable goods.
Because
right.
You're on someone else's field.
Yeah.
You're a worker, not a. You don't own the means of production.
So evidence, so we
right.
This evidence and this like that.
So Marxist critique.
This value, like that, really the that everyone is supposed to be owning their own means of production.
So it's a good question.
It's
what
it's to an employer is like we're not.
That's right. You're not free. Right. You're not free if you're subservient to the employer. I mean, you see the same text that I see.
Right. No, I
it's an interesting question. What does it bottom out in? Like, what's the true principle here? What's the ultimate principle? Is the ultimate principle some idea of autonomy? Did anybody read that Broyd and Wiener article?
Yeah.
So you'll look back at it now. You'll see that they try to go in that direction. Torah is trying to preserve your freedom by limiting. You know, in secular world, they think that it's freedom of contract. You're freer the more contracts you could enter into. So libertarians have an argument that people should be allowed to enter into slavery contracts because that's an exercise of your freedom. Right? You should have the freedom to make agreements on your own autonomy. And, well, that's right. That's a kind of freedom. And the Broyd and Wiener, I think, try to say, well, the Torah's limitations on agreements shows that freedom from contract is like the Torah's conception of freedom, that you're not, you can't even bind yourself into these long-term obligations. I don't know if that's the true principle here. We're going to be much more formal about it right now. We don't have to get into that discussion. So look here at the Mordechai, bottom of page 20, top of 21 in the source sheet here. So the Mordechai quotes, if you see in the beginning of the Mordechai, he quotes, Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim v'lo avadim l'avadim. Does everybody see that? And he says, Tema, im kein, kishem she'asr limacher be'eved ivri, kachi he'asr l'haskir atzma, minikari hacha po'al eved. Just notice, he's commenting on the Gemara in Bava Metzia Daf Yud, which cited that pasuk for a po'el being able to back out, be'emtza melacha and yad po'al ki'ad ba'al bayis. And he's saying, well, if laws of avadim get applied to po'el, then the iser of selling yourself into avdus should also get exported to dinei schiras. Okay? And then his first answer is to say, well, maybe there's a distinction of po'el is lo mikri eved, maybe there's a distinction between them. But then, in the last paragraph here, he says, v'nirli, that's so any professional. He should be careful. Right? So you shouldn't enter into this kind of permanent, comprehensive employment agreement that's more than 3 years. Why? What does he say, Ben? Yeah, that the chol.
The chol tefein shloshanim nafgalei mituras sachir.
Yeah, very good. So anytime it's more than 3 years, you're already outside of the category of sachir. Notice in his view, sachir is permissible, right? To be a poel.
The difference is temporal.
Right, but once you do 3 years and a mashu, you're already outside of permissible bounds of sachiros. Notice he's very precise to say eved gamar lo hava lo chol hilchosav. Right, you're not a full Eved at 3 years, but kiven denafkale mitorah sachir ka'avar al kili b'nei Yisrael avadim. Right, so the Torah sets up contracts for 3 year terms because that's the limit where you're in permissible boundaries that are non Eved like.
I think it's maybe also from this Mordechai though, relatedly, that it might be impossible to be a sachir for 6 years. Maybe that once you hit a certain threshold of time, you're forced to have the kidney.
Yes,
you're
I agree.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I want to take out of this Mordechai. So two things. First, I want to say that, look, you see how the duration here is very central to distinguishing the categories, right? 3 years is a sachir, more than 3 years is already quasi-eved, and maybe 6 years is constitutive of being an eved. Right? That's what a sachir for 6 years is.
How do you read the line of Eved right between the borders?
Yeah, it's not. What does that mean?
Is that line saying,
is that because it's only between 3 and 6?
Is that a descriptive statement or is that a prescriptive statement? Is he telling?
I think it's descriptive. He's saying that.
That even though you are working more than 3, you still don't have all the rules of.
Right, because maybe that only kicks in at 6 years.
Mm-hmm. That's a good parenthesis, but you're not a full Eved
until 6 years. Correct.
But you're definitely not a sachir.
Exactly. He says that. Nafgale mitora sachir. So on the Mordechai's view, sachir is defined by max 3 years. That's permissible. It's a permissible category. Mm-hmm. More than 3 years is already impermissible because he says, kiva denafgale mitora sachir, avra kili b'nei Yisrael avadim. Right? You're violating v'lo avadim l'avadim. And then at 6 years, it sounds like then you're really in trouble. Then you're in the Rambam's category of the Eved stuff. And that's really bad. Now, Yair is making the further point not just the point that I'm making, that there's like a spectrum here, you know, your sachir is okay, then quasi-eved, then eved. Yair is saying, well, you see maybe even the stronger point here, that the only difference between an eved and a poel is the duration. Correct?
Right. I think the line, the eved gomer lo haved hol chosav, would be redundant if, you know, there are tons of, we know there are tons of differences between being an eved, you know,
right,
a get shechur or a kinyan iser or whatever else happens with an eved. Like, obviously, if sachir's not an eved, even the havamim that it could be like an eved, I think.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see a shita that's even more explicit about this. But I think that's where I'm going with this. I think that's where this shita brings us, and that I think it's important for our analysis because again, we're trying to show that the Maram's view, and remember the Mordechai is in the Maram school, that a poel gufo kanoi like eved, like an eved, and yad poel kya balabayis, it doesn't really strain the concepts of Eved or Poel too far. It's not certainly not incoherent, and it's not hard to justify that these concepts may be very related and only distinguished by something as trivial as the duration of the term.
Except come to the issue of,
I understand, it's a Kenyan Isser on an Eved Ivri. He can't back out.
Well, I think that the Mordechai will say on Yair's reading that once you're there for 6 years, there's a Kenyan Isser also. The Kenyan Isser exists in virtue of the duration of the employment. It's not that...
It's ridiculous, the duration of the employment. The duration of the employment is a gezeiras hakatzav, and it's 3 years. It could have been 6 years. Nowhere is it written in the, you know, there's nothing conceptually interesting about it being 3 years. I mean, the numbers are really not something to debate an argument like this on.
So here's the question I have for you. So Cole, when you say that there's no Kenyan Isser, so are you saying that when I hire an Eved Ivri, he has to say, you know, hidini muchon umazuman to create the Kenyan Isser, that poof, now I'm a shabbat myself for Kenyan Isser, and now I'm much of a shivcha kananis. You're saying that's your view, right? My view is, when I hire somebody to work for me for 7 years, that agreement shaft, that creates the Kenyan Isser, and that's what creates the head there for the shivcha kananis. Because you just like hinini muchans more than you like duration?
No,
like you
I,
like
I
you like time less than you like speech utterances?
No, because duration is the quintessential question of degree. And we know that there are differences between in time between an Eved Ivri and let's just start with the facts. The 3 years thing is a svara that some Rishonim have. Let's start with the fact. There's a Kenyan Isser on an Eved Ivri, and no such thing exists for an Eved, for a Poel.
Well, I would push back. I mean, I agree that no Rishon has said it explicitly, except the Marami Rutenberg did say that a Poel is Gufo Kanoi and he's Ke'eved L'chol Hilchosav. And you might say that strong view of the Marami Rutenberg denies that there's any meaningful distinction between an Eved and a Poel. Every Poel is an Eved, arguably.
The Gemara says that what do you mean Gufo, let's cash out Gufo Kanoi in the language of the Gemara. As far as I can tell, the best evidence for Gufo Kanoi has to do with the Baal's rights, the things that you find when you're
working for him.
When you're just out, you know, and you pick something up and it's nicked into the box. Now, for an Eved, that's a global Kenyan. There aren't distinctions. There's no such thing as, I mean, this is really the best argument. An Eved Ivri is not an Eved Ivri for a particular task.
I disagree, Cole. I think hold off, because we're gonna get to this stuff in a second. I disagree. I think that's still an open question to us. We don't know what makes an Eved Ivri rather than a Poel, and I think I'm suggesting, and you're suggesting, that.
Where's the Gemara that says that an Eved Ivri are distinguished by task? It's ridiculous. There's no Gemara that says that. No, the Gemara assumes that an Eved Ivri is a global relationship, not quite as deep as the Eved Kanani relationship.
Oh, we don't know. The Gemara talks a lot about an Eved Ivri. Well, the Gemara talks a lot about an Eved Ivri, but doesn't tell us in virtue of what somebody is an Eved Ivri, right? So we don't know what makes him an Eved Ivri. And you're saying it's inconceivable that everybody who's hired for more than 6 years, for more than 3 years, it's inconceivable to anybody who's hired for more than 6 years requires a get shifur?
It doesn't interest me. Nobody ever thought you needed a get shifur for a poel. It's ridiculous.
No, he's not a poel. He's not a poel if he's working for more than 6 years. Say it again. Right, but I think what Yair is saying, we'll get this in a second. I think what you're saying that you become an Eved Ivri when you're hired for 6 years, right, Yair?
Or that I'm incapable of hiring someone for longer than 6 years without hiring them in the way that I hired an Eved Ivri. So in Achinami, the Kinyan Isser was constituted by whatever else it's constituted by, but it's
that's
just,
the only way to have this long-term relationship.
Or I'm incapable of doing so without those conditions.
Yeah.
By the way, that might be the best evidence that a poel and an Eved Ivri are different, because that inability that you have, I think, is probably the result of the fact, and there's evidence in the Rishonim for this, that the Rishonim don't want the poel relationship lapsing into an Eved Ivri relationship if the poel and Eved Ivri relationship.
So.
They were on a spectrum together. They would not expect one of them to be able to...
Okay, cool, but we shouldn't confuse two different claims, right? One claim, we're not claiming that the Poel and the Eved Ivri are the same. I'm claiming that they're different, but they're distinguished by this trivial matter of degree, which 3 years versus 6 years. That's the claim that I'm putting forth right now. Let's see a little more, and then
you just have to, like...
Yeah, Yoni.
Yeah, so I don't disagree with... All right, can we go back to the Maran, Mordechai specifically?
Yep.
More like the Lashon herself?
Mordechai.
Because I didn't decide with Kol just on the Mordechai. Not, I don't know if I philosophically do in all she don't, but the Mordechai himself sounds a bit like he's worried about what it looks like. And then, like, first of all, he has this criteria of if you're late,
Samuch al Shulchano,
and your fact that you're Bekeva, it sounds like the issue here is not so much inherent, unless it has to have these criteria, always has to be true.
Right.
If you're 6 years but not Samuch al Shulchano, is there also a problem?
That's a very good question.
It's not clear there is, and it's not.
But even then, right? So you need some of this other stuff to move. In addition to the duration, you need some sort of permanence.
Yeah, but it sounds like the issue he's dealing with more is it looks like it's an Eved. And the problem is that Eved Gomor Lo Avid Lochol Tzchaltov is a descriptive thing. And that you don't have any of the benefits of being an Eved. And that's what bothers me.
Not sure. I'm not sure if that parenthetical side, based off my bulls, he may just mean that between 3 and 6 years, you're not an Eved Gomor Lochol Tzchaltov. What's that, Cole?
No, sorry,
lost secret. Okay. And he may just mean that parenthetical
right,
or
either way, but either way, maybe. I think you can read it different ways.
Right.
But either way.
I agree that the Mordechai doesn't fully determine Yair's point.
It seems like he's more worried about what it looks like.
Well, he does say, Kivan de Nafkale mitora sachir. I don't see any.
Then why is he so worried about it? Then what is the Keva and what's the Samach HaShulchan have to do with it?
Because you have to be that's like a true Poel. Right, there has to be some permanence.
A true poel is someone who's Tomich al Shulchano. Is that a didn't poel
night? Well, put it this way, in order for a certain poelim to rise to the level of Eved, there has to be a certain kind of permanence to it. I can see that point.
But I'm saying at that point, I'm saying so either it's about optics.
Why can't it be constitutive? Why can't it be that being a certain permanent kind of a poel for 6 years or more than three, that's what makes you into an Eved.
Okay, but then it's like then at that point you're like veering into, it's not inherent to all of them. It's really just
I'm willing to concede that point, but
it's really just someone who acts like an Eved becomes an Eved.
Well, I don't know why. I don't know if this. I wouldn't have characterized just being Bekeva emo. So you have a butler or something, or you have a milamed who lives in someone's basement.
Yeah, and he's working for him.
Well, he's not doing other work. He's just, you know, teaching the kids Torah every evening or something.
Yeah. So as long as he's there for in 3 years, and that's
Avdus.
That's Avdus. Okay. But that's the demon on Paul against the demon on. What looks like Avdus is Avdus.
No, I think it's saying that Poel becomes it.
Or
this guy would be a Poel.
Certain conditions. You need a certain duration of
time. Yeah, okay. Also need. Right, I'm just saying.
If he did it for 3 years, he's a Poel.
But I'm just saying.
If he did this for 6 years, now he's an Eved. Right. That's the.
Maybe I think it's more. I don't think it's a statement on Poel. I think it's a more statement on like what looks like Avdus becomes is Usher.
Well, it's Mara
science. What do you think is about?
No, it doesn't have to be optics. It could be real. Each other. It's Usher because it becomes Avdus. But
but what makes it become Avdus?
The fact that he's living there for and working for you for.
But if he did it for 3 years, then it's not Avdus.
Okay. Then it would be.
If he does it for six.
Plus. Okay, fine, but it's not a din poelim. It's a din in what becomes Avdus.
But I'm saying that the boundary between Poel and Avdus here is very porous.
But I don't think it's because I don't think it's because of the nature of poelim. I think it's more a nature of Avdus.
Right. One thing you might be getting at least is that you might deny my idea in the Mordechai that you can have a Poel under these circumstances as a, you know, for over 6 years.
You can have a Poel for 50 years.
It would be Avdus without any of the institutionalized rules and protections. You know, not every din of Avdus is, you know, constitutes Avdus. It might be that some things are imposed upon people who are Avadim.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think
being an Avdus is, you know, some of the conditions of Avdus.
Well, I'll say, you'll see the Sam Sofer, the way we'll see this in a second, so I think we should get to it, is that the way he reads this Mordechai is you don't have to be living in the guy's house. He says a Rav who's living in the community and who's supported by the community, that's...
Should renew his contract.
Says that's Samach. He says, Ein lecha Samach al shulchano lios bekeva gedola mizu.
I think it's often good for rabbis to have personal life.
Contracts longer than 3
right.
years.
How's that
sounds like he's talking about his own personal life.
Maybe, but he says, right? So my point is that it's not that you're, you know, living in the servants' quarters. Maybe you have the nicest home in the community. But if you have this kind of dependence for more than 3 years, then you're bordering on Avdus.
Yeah, sure, but I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying it's not a din poelim. I think it's like a special din of Avdus. Like, we can learn all the dinners of Avdus, and you're just like, by an addendum, anytime you do this and this and this, and it becomes too close to Avdus, that becomes Usher.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why would you say that? How could we deny one and not the other? It's the same thing.
Right. Okay. You see how a pumped up Poel is just kind of like.
It's not even like pumped up. It's just like an Eved is just the term for a Poel who has worked for longer than he is supposed to.
That's a good way of putting it.
But this could be this could be equivalent to a din in being an ani who's begging for tzedakah. Like any time, like you're doing all this stuff, then like you become you can have all these permissions, but like once you get too close to Avdus.
No, I don't think you could have said this about an ani who doesn't have an employment.
I mean, it's not really.
I don't think you'd say that an indigent person is almost like an eved because he's asking for food.
No, I'm not even. There's no good parallel to it because the guy has to be working.
Because about the special relationship between a Poel and an eved.
But I don't think it's a special relationship between Poel.
Let's see more. And then, Mordechai has another cute raya. So remember, so far we just had the pasuk in Devarim and the pasuk in Yeshaya. He actually quotes this, and he acknowledges it's only a ktsas raya. He says in the second to last line of Mordechai, ktsas raya miperek mifanin, maise badem echad shiard migalila elyon, vihiskir atzma itzal balabayis kimol shanim. So that's the raya. The raya is that there's a story in Gemara and Shabbos about a guy who came down from the Galil and hired himself out to work for 3 years. It's a very ktsas, right? I mean,
some raya.
Right. It's just the fact of the story that it happened to have been 3 years. He's saying, well, why wasn't it more than 3 years? So Mordechai's saying, well, you see, it must have been, you know, common practice to limit these agreements to 3 years. But, you know, Mordechai acknowledges it's only ktsas raya. It does something.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not bad.
Maybe you should have said, you know, ktsas Tziua or something. Maybe so Raya's.
Yafet.
Maybe the Raya is like the. It's too epistemic. It's too strong epistemically. But
as Dr. Holtz would say.
Yeah. Now, let me also point out two side points. Two related side points. First of all, there's a bit of machlokes here in the post game. And this, by the way, this din of the Mordechai gets paskined in the Ramah. There is a small machlokes here in the post game about whether the Isser is to do this for 3 years or for more than 3 years. And the Mordechai, it sounds very. Is the sun killing you? Is
that for sure. Keep going. I'm
you can sit here if you want.
No.
I think it's missing a shade. All right,
I'll move. It's okay.
Oh, that's why the room's available, probably. You know, nobody wants to use the room when the sun is coming. So if you notice, in the Mordechai...
Shades, though, so you're good.
You can sit over here if you want. There's room over here.
That window has double shades, so you're fine.
In the, if you look in the Mordechai, it's clear that the Isser is to do this for more than 3 years. Right? And he was explicit even. Why is it for more than 3 years? Because nafgalei mitoras sachir. So according to the Mordechai, it's clear that Sakhir is a permissible category. Eved is when you go beyond Sakhir. See that? If you look at the Ramah, both in the Darkei Moshe and Simin Shin Lamed Aleph, that's what I have here in our source sheet in the revised version on page 22. That's in the old version also. The Ramah says, Yesh li zayir, l'sofer, l'melamed, u'shar bali melacha, lios, l'haskir atzmo, underlying section, lios, bebeis, balavayis, bekeva, v'samach al shulchan, shalosh shanim. So he says it's also to do it for 3 years. Same in the Shulchan Aruch. You could see here in Shin Lamed Gimel Gimel. And we high time also the poel afidu malamid also for the haskar asma lios bebeis balabais bekeva shaloshanim. So the Shach in Shin Lamed Gimel Sifyid Zayin says, oh, it's got to be a mistake because if you look at the Mordechai, the Isser is yoser mi gimel shanim, right? And in the Ramah, it becomes asr for gimel shanim. So the Shach thinks that there's maybe a substantive dispute here that...
How could the Ramah argue that? The guy from the Galil worked for 30 years.
Right. That's true. Maybe he didn't like that. Right. Maybe he didn't like that Raya. He liked the Mordechai. He didn't like the Raya. That's right.
No, I think that would be a better Raya against the Ramah, though. That would be in favor of the Mordechai.
Yes, it would be.
Yeah.
Correct. That's a good point. It's a very good point, Ben. So he says that the Sma and the Yershushan weren't sensitive to this distinction, and they understood the Ramah that it's usher for Gimel years. And they said, because this is what they write, this is what the Sma and the Yershushan write. So I'm in the Shach now in the bold section. The Gimel Shanim Shem Sachir Alav, the usher Leo Sachir. See, they understand the point to be that Sachir itself is a 3 year relationship, and that's what's problematic. So, if you want to have a permissible working relationship, you've got to be less than a sachir. Just an interesting machlokes here, whether the permissible category is sachir and the problematic category is to be nafkali mitora sachir, like the Mordechai and the Shach themselves want to say, or as the Ramah and the Yershushan and the Sma are saying it, that it's problematic to be a sachir. Right? So, for our purposes right now, it's not an important machlokas because I'm really interested in just showing the spectrum that Poel and Av Eved are on the same spectrum. But obviously, if you go for the Yershushan and the Sma view, that works well with that Marami Rutenberg point that, you know, Poel is Gufo Kanoi, and being a Poel itself constitutes a kind of Avdus. Just in his view, to be a Poel, it has to be really 3 years. Okay. Now,
is there a substantive difference in language about Yeshli Zahir for more than 3 years? We had Mordechai says it, as opposed to like the Ramah's Pothany and Asr Lepoel? Where one's like a warning?
Ramah like, where? In the Ramah?
Yeah, in the Ramah in the Shulchan.
Interesting. Because in Darkei Moshe, he quotes it verbatim. He says,
yeah,
Yeshli Zahir.
Yeah,
he's quoting. When he gets to Shulchan Aruch, he twitches it. Sneaky. Asr Lepoel.
Is that like a substantive difference in terms of like how they view
yeah.
it? Like one's like a warning.
A moral
like
point.
Yeah,
very interesting. I didn't even think of those terms.
Is it with
the very possibly, right? Maybe the formulation in the Mordechai is much more diluted. You know, maybe a more Marasayan issue or something like you were saying. And then once it gets to the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch, it's usher. It's a prohibition. Very interesting point. Yeah, think about that. Let me just add that in here. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, but the Mordechai also says, Kimin anafka lemitor sacher ka'avar.
Right, that's true. So it depends whether you emphasize the beginning or...
Right.
Yeah. So both those formulations are in the Mordechai itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, there's an exception to this Isser, which is obviously makes a lot of sense. The Shach and Shin Lamed Gimel Tes Zayin says, given that you're allowed to sell yourself into Avdus if you're fully destitute, like we saw in the Rambams, then obviously if you're fully destitute, it should be permissible to sell yourself into a long-term Schiros agreement.
That's obvious.
Well, because you're not going to think that a polo should be more chamor than avdos, right? So the iser for a poel is patterned after the iser for an eved, but then of course the permissions and the licenses that exist for selling yourself into an eved should apply with equal force to a poel.
Okay.
That's the Shach's point here in just Sifkat and Tezayin in the bottom, top of page 23.
What is the evidence?
What's that? That there's Nisr?
For Socher?
To be a Sachir?
Yeah, what's the evidence that there's an
Nisr? Well, it's born out of that Ibn Ezra and the Mordechai. And then it makes its way into the Ramah from there.
Where did they get? I mean, like, what?
You want to know what their Misora is? Yeah, they grounded in the Psukim of Shalosh Shanim.
Why would be usher to work for a living? Why would be usher to work if you if you just want to? What would the?
Oh, they say explicitly because you're an Eved Lavadim.
Yeah.
Right, so it's the same issue that applies to an Eved.
Okay.
Well, you think being a first year associate at a Manhattan law firm is better than? What's that?
I said one man's anachanami, another man's reduced to Adam. So if your view commits you to the conclusion that it could be usher for a rich man to work to be a day laborer, then your view is pretty crazy.
Well, he could work for himself. He's self-employed.
That's what I said.
He can't work for another. Ridiculous.
Well, and on Yoni's point, if he's not imo bikheva and samach al shulchano. If it doesn't create this kind of power relationship, then maybe it's permissible.
Or if it's a one-year thing.
Yeah, or if it's one, two,
means of production. Like
two and a half.
You can't be subservient to an employer.
Yeah.
That's
I agree.
Strain.
It's impossible.
You're too much of like a conservative freedom of contract guy, Cole.
Marxist.
That's right. You can't alienate yourself from your labor.
Exactly right. Yeah. All right. Anyway,
except that I don't think it's. But I'm agnostic on whether the true principle here is, you know, this issue of labor alienation, or this idea of subjecting yourself to somebody else's authority.
Well, I think the second one's definitely more.
No, I think Marx would agree.
Right. Avadim
Lavadim. Alienation from the means of production has to do with modernity. It doesn't have to do with the being a laborer as such. Labor as such, that's a power problem. But you're saying that all power relationships between capital and labor are exactly the same. And that is that.
We'll have to save the Marxist discussion for our Shabbaton.
Right. It's not about.
Yeah, I don't think
we should get some Marxist readings in the email list. Though.
Yeah,
I don't know about the Marxism.
It's not
about
freedom.
On
the phone for the Shabbaton. No.
Well, maybe you could for your time difference.
It's not about having control over our own labor as much as like acknowledging
the authority.
Come on.
The authority.
God alone is our authority.
Right. Okay. I agree. That's more implicit in Evid Lavadim.
Right.
Yeah.
What one I just want to make about Avadim,
sure,
very quickly, is that I think implicit in this discussion is a claim that even though an Evid goes free with Shemitah, in my understanding, we still have to conceive.
Yovel.
With Yovel?
Yeah.
So
have a not every
term. Okay, so they never mind. So I misunderstood. I was under the impression Evid couldn't have a 6-year term that goes through Shemitah.
No, I think he goes through Shemitah, just Yovel is the only thing that sets him free.
So when does he need Mertzia if he's going to go for longer than
Yovel?
He needs it at Yovel, okay.
Yeah.
Fine, never mind then.
But if the Ramah is really saying this, then when did it change? What was the transition out of this?
How do you know it changed?
True.
Oh, right.
You're on the basis and you tell me.
Right. Right. Well, it's not clear that the contracts are ineffective. Right. We can look more into this question, actually. I'm less interested in the question. I'm less interested in the particulars of the din of this Isser as much as its relationship to the Eved question.
Sure, but
still, it's a... Yeah, so I'll point you right here. The Chassam Sofer, in our next source, actually, points out that there's a discussion about this Mordechai. Okay? And he says that he has a bit of a chiddush.
Can I go back to the Avadim?
Yes, please.
I hire a guy in year, 17 of the Yovel cycle. He works for me for 6 years. After that, he goes free automatically. If he wants to keep working for me, I have to rehire him. So I can do Ritzia after 6 or at Yovel.
Well, you pierce his ear, and then he's your Eved until Yovel.
And then at Yovel, he goes free regardless.
Correct.
Okay.
You can probably rehire him
afterwards. So then the substantive point I wanted to make, I think, still holds, which is if I hire an Eved the year before Yovel, I still have to conceive of his contract as a 6-year contract being canceled by Yovel.
That's right, yes.
If I want duration to be a determinative factor.
You hire him forever, you hire him for exactly, and then Yovel's an afgata de Malka.
Right, okay.
As they phrase it. But you'll see that becomes crucial to this machlokas in the Mishnah Melech and the Marit that we're about to see.
Correct.
What were you going to say about
the Chassam Sofer? So Chassam Sofer here, just, he's, two important points. The first is that he says, some other points out that there's a bit of discussion about whether this Mordechai is right. He phrases the Mordechai's view. You could just skip to the bold section in this Tshuva L'Chassam Sofer and Simen Kufayim Beis. He quotes the Maram and the Mordechai. Kol sheyesh bo k'tzas roshem avdus dehainu shemaskir asma b'yoser mishalosh shanim mechzik eved ivri v'aser. So you can see he was like Yoni's initial reading of the Mordechai that he understands it in this kind of Marisayan way.
Okay.
See that? It looks like Eved, and that's why it's Usser. He doesn't want to go in for the substantive view that you already are a kind of an Eved. Okay?
Okay. Well, how is that?
Itamar.
1 second.
How is that his point? There's no Kenyan Isser, effectively.
Right, because he thinks that you're not really an Eved.
Right.
Right? Now, look. Now, the Chassam Sofer also says...
We're saying, because we don't have real Avdus today, then therefore, like, this issue of...
I think because he thinks that maybe he's in Cole's camp a little bit, that he doesn't agree that it's just the term. He doesn't agree with Yair, that it's just the term that separates an Eved from a Poel. And he's saying, I could explain away the Mordechai in Marisayan ways. Right?
Well, what is that explaining away the Mordechai? Because is he saying more than just right? That the question of between years, the years 4 and 5 or whatever, questionable, right? 6 is avdus, 3 is
saying, right, 6 could be full. The problem of 3 is that it's mechzika avdus.
Right. 3, 4, and 5.
It's when you're in this limbo. That's when the mechzi point kicks in.
Right.
That's very. I think that's a fair point. So that brings him much closer to the Mordechai.
Itamar.
Right? That brings him... Yes, Cole.
I actually have to go. I'm having drinks with Bob Nozick's son, if it happens.
Oh, wow.
And he's an old friend of my mother, so So if there are any questions that...
ask him what he thinks of Marxism.
You want me to ask?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll report back.
Right.
We'll be in touch. Take care.
Great. Enjoy.
Thank you, Paul.
Bye.
Okay.
Okay. Now he's out. Now
we can. Yeah. That's quite. All right. Let's cover ground. He left in style, also, right? So let me just last. Well, we have to finish anyway. So let me just make 2 points. So notice, there's a view of Tosin Bamitzia Daf Yud, which Chassam Sofer quotes here. Where the Tosus disagrees, seems to disagree with this idea of the Mordechai. Tosus says that there's no Isser enter into a long-term agreement. Well, we'll see that Tosus soon. But the interesting thing is that the Chassam Sofer says the reason for that is Kivan Sheyesh Hekeira Sagi. V'hainu Sheyotze B'toch Zmano B'li Shtar. He thinks it's okay because there's a Heker. That's why Tosus agrees that if you look like an Eved, it should be Usser. Just Tosos happens to think that, you know, you don't always look like an Eved so long as you can go through the Shtar Shechor. But the Chassam Sofer wants to Mechadesh, is what he says in the last paragraph here. And he's, everybody would agree that if you entered into agreement for more than 3 years and you accepted a Knas for backing out, you say, oh, if I back out in the middle, I'll pay you such and such, that's for sure Usser. And he says, because Suleka Hefresh Bein Olavein HaEved. What distinguishes the Eved is the fact that it's hard for him to back out. But if you artificially make it hard for you to back out, then there's no distinction between you and an Eved, and it becomes Usser again. You see that? And he says, even Tosus would agree that it's Usser. L'chadesh yatzasi l'fi zeh, Usser l'hasnos b'tchila, she'im yachzor yitzarech l'shalim kach v'kach, de'im kein su'laka hefresh b'ino l'veina Eved. So you see, the Chassam Sofer seems to recognize also that there are certain cases where your schiros is not distinguishable from kind of avdos. Okay, should we...
The optics. He still remains in the optics.
You think so? Because he says later on, hekeira?
Yeah, because explicitly, the whole point, then he says...
Chad hekeira or shtei hekeira.
Right,
yeah.
And saying, I can't back out without a guest shikur, and I can't back out without paying you money are still different things.
Right.
Yeah.
They're substantively different.
Yeah.
And he's a Marasayan guy, mostly. Okay, I think we should stop here, even though we're in the middle of our discussion, but we should stop here, right? Because 12:30. So let me just say, I want you for next time, look at the Chavas Yair on page 23. Look at the end of the Chassam Sofer. I think what?
People say Chavas Yair, and people go, psh, as though I wrote the Chavas Yair, which I didn't.
You related to him? It's the, you share a first name.
I don't
really
name. Him at all, no.
Okay, look at this Marid on page 24. The Marid, I think, is the Baal Hashita, that there is no difference between an Eved and a Poel, except for the number of years. Mishnah Melech responds to that. So, yes, yeah, so take a look at the rest of the Makoros on this. So, again, then our next topic is going to be Yad Poel, Yad Baal Abayis. Just a little more, I want to look into that. Like, if you have your Poel doing mitzvahs for you, could you make a bracha? It's like, how strongly do you think Yado is Yad Baal Abayis?
We still never got to really addressing the question of the difference between Evit Ivri and Evit Kanani.
You want to, that's related to that. So
which I think, yeah.
Yeah, it'll come up there.
I want to make sure we don't ignore that.
Okay, good.
Compared to an Evit Kanani, I think that's a much more radical.
Correct. Okay. Although we did see some people who compare him to an Eved Kanani.
I know, and I think it's our discussion, I think, for the most part, has presumed
that there is that
to an Eved Ivri, but I think the...
We'd be explicit about where. Okay,
the
good.
Extent of that comparison, I think, is worth examining.
And then after that, we'll start the first Sigya. Yep. Great. Shkreich, everyone.